Welcome back to Yahoo Finance. I'm Jared Blickery. The U.S. trade deficit came in at $73.3 billion. That was a deficit for the month of August, a bit wider than the street expected. We want to talk about all things trade here, and for that, we're going to bring in Gary Locke, the former Secretary of Commerce under President Obama, also former U.S. Ambassador to China, also former Washington governor. Thank you for joining us. We just got some statements from the Biden administration, really just continuing the push and kind of it was a very strongly worded statement against China, saying that they're going to continue the outline of the agreements, the phase one agreements enacted under the Trump administration. It doesn't seem like things are thawing here. I'm just wondering what your take on the situation is.
Well, I think the Biden administration is really looking for concrete actions by China in response to the deep-seated concerns that not just American companies and government officials have, but companies and governments around the world. China has a very discriminatory trade policies, not living up to its commitments under the WTO, not sufficient protections of intellectual property, not a strong rule of law, and really subsidizing many of their industries, which are contrary to world rules and contrary to the agreements they made when they joined the WTO. So the Biden administration still is waiting for concrete steps by China addressing these concerns and really living up to the agreement made with President Trump.
You know, those comments certainly really echoed by current trade representative Catherine Tai yesterday, where, you know, she said essentially this isn't about decoupling. It's about what are the conditions for recoupling and what are the pressures that can be placed on China to at least meet its commitments that were laid out in the phase one agreement. I mean, what do you think should be the conditions and how does this deadlock, how do you resolve this deadlock?
Well, first of all, while the concerns of the American government and American companies are legitimate, I do think that the Trump administration made a serious error when they imposed these tariffs on Chinese goods coming into America, and then China retaliated with tariffs, which is really a surcharge on the cost of goods, and they imposed the retaliatory tariffs on American goods going into China. That has really hurt the American consumer, American workers and American companies, because the cost of American goods are now much more expensive in China, which really puts the products from other countries, whether it's Europe, Canada, Latin America, elsewhere, at a competitive advantage, hurting American companies, American workers. At the same time, American consumers are paying much more for Chinese products, whether it's clothes, shoes, sporting goods, tools, you name it. And that's hurting the American household. The Wall Street Journal, the New York Fed has estimated that the impact of these American tariffs on Chinese goods has cost the average American family about $800 extra per year. What would have been better would have been for the United States to join with other countries in a multilateral, collaborative, a multi-pronged approach against China instead of the United States doing it alone. Because while the other countries are rooting for us to win and to prevail and to have China modify their trade practices, they're benefiting during this trade war.
Secretary, that was exactly my follow-up here, because we've seen China now apply to get into the CPTPP. Of course, you served under an administration that was all about the pivot to Asia, and yet the U.S. isn't a part of what is one of the largest regional trade pacts. How much of that do you think weakens the U.S. hand when it comes to trying to resolve some of these differences on trade?
Well, I think it was most unfortunate that we did not ratify the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was put together under the organized and led by the United States. And it's a multi-country trade agreement, an advanced trade agreement that sets very high standards for health and human safety for its workers, in protection for the environment. It really addresses many of the complaints that American workers, labor groups, environmentalists, and American companies have with respect to these trade agreements that we have all across the world. And this would have set such a high bar that, in fact, China was not willing to join because it could not have met these conditions. What's happened is that tariffs for all the other participating countries, whether it's Canada, have now been lowered so that they can now sell their goods, let's say, into Vietnam and these and other parts of the world in Southeast Asia, the countries that are part of the TPP, at lesser costs than American products. And so not joining the TPP has really hurt American workers and American companies. And it's at the same time, as it's setting a very high bar, addressing the complaints that American companies and American labor officials have long had about our trade agreement. So it was most unfortunate that we were trying to address their concerns and we did not join in.
I want to ask you, as shift gears a little bit, to the developing energy situation and crisis that's going on in China and, for that matter, throughout various parts of the world. Any measures with respect to trade that can alleviate, or anything that you think is being done right now by some of the authorities that is hampering the situation over there?
Well, the power situation is worldwide, and it's affecting, oil and gas, coal. There are export restrictions by many of the countries in terms of the exporting of coal. China itself is trying to cut down on the use of coal because of the carbon emissions, but also just the pollutants in the air are really hurting and prematurely killing millions of Chinese people every single year. China is trying to reduce its dependence on coal, but they also need the coal to produce electricity, to power their factories, and to heat homes and to provide energy for daily use. So it's a really a bad situation, because what's happening is that as these factories are operating on less hours because of the restriction on electricity, because of the lack of a power supply, including coal, then you're actually having fewer products made, which then affects the supply chain for all things all around the world, including consumer goods, but also components. And so it really is the supply chain problems that we're seeing throughout the world, whether it's chips, whether it's not having container ships coming in, or not having container ships in the right or containers in the right locations around the world. We're in for quite a supply mess.
Secretary, let's talk about what's playing out at the WTO as it relates to intellectual property rights. There's been this proposal on the table to waive TRIPS, which stands for trade-related intellectual property rights. The thinking here, of course, is that if you waive that, particularly as it relates to the COVID-19 vaccine, it would accelerate the distribution, especially in developing countries. I mean, how much do you think of when we look at where things are in the pandemic, how much of that is contingent on getting that kind of waiver in place? We've seen holdouts like Switzerland who have a strong presence in the pharmaceutical space.
Well, I think it sounds good, waiving the intellectual property protections of all the pharmaceutical companies that are involved in the, this groundbreaking new technology to fight COVID and to provide the vaccines. But it really will do absolutely nothing. We need vaccinations. We need the vaccines into the arms of people right now. We need all the manufacturing capability ramped up, going 24/7 with additional lines of manufacturing right now. The Biden administration has pledged to donate 1.1 billion doses of the vaccine by the end of the year. We actually need 11 billion doses worldwide. And so we really need all the other countries around the world, the advanced industrialized countries, to donate, to help pay for the vaccines and to get them into the arms of people. India and South Africa were the leading proponents in asking for the waiver of these intellectual property protections. But they're already producing the vaccines. And in fact, they've been in some ways not allowing the distribution or the sharing of these vaccines to other countries that really need them. Why do they want the waiver or the getting rid of these intellectual property protections? It's not because they want to produce more COVID vaccines. They're doing that now. What they really want is to understand the technology so that they can start working on cures for other diseases. And China would benefit from having these intellectual properties protections waived, so that they can develop new vaccines for other diseases and use the technology to address other cures, and then share those medicines around the world as they try to get other countries to align themselves and to support the policies of China. What we really need is to get vaccines distributed, and even countries in Africa that have been given the vaccines have had to turn them back because they don't have the way to store it. They don't have people to inject it. And so we really need to ramp up current production.
Yeah, I mean, certainly any solution that leads to more shots in the arms of people, welcome, especially given the inequality that we've seen between advanced countries and developing countries. Gary Locke, it's always good to have you on, former Secretary of Commerce under President Obama, also the former U.S. Ambassador to China and the former Washington governor.